The interview you're about to hear was originally broadcast on April 4, 2012 on the Free School University program on Occupy Boston Radio as part of our coverage of the Day of Action for Public Transportation. Occupy Boston Radio is at obr.fm on your internet browser. The Free School University broadcasts educational programming by the 99% for the 99%.
Button. All right.
Thank you.
So, we're here in the studio with Jeremy Thompson, who is a researcher with 1199 SEIU and Mass Uniting, and we're going to talk about MBTA finances today. Maybe, Jeremy, you could start by just telling people how you got involved with the MBTA financing, why you started looking into that, what your interest in that was.
Yeah, sure. So a couple of years ago, some researchers with SEIU's international team started looking into these things called interest rate swaps, which are derivatives that governments and nonprofits all around the country and all around the world really use to hedge the direction of interest rates, which affects their debt service costs. And so some colleagues of mine unearthed some real problems with these deals out on the West Coast especially. There was some pretty good coverage in the New York Times of some interest rate swaps that had gone bad in Los Angeles. And so when Mass Uniting started looking into, started working on MBTA stuff, interest rate swaps kind of became an issue that bubbled to the surface. And I realized that these things were costing the MBTA tens of millions of dollars every year. And I should note that they're costing other governments all around the state, including the state itself, the Mass Water Resources Authority, UMass, several tens of millions of dollars a year as well.
So this was basically a game that the MBTA and other governments tried to do to reduce their costs, but it backfired, basically. Maybe tell us what interest rate swaps are.
Yeah, sure. So, the word game may be a bit loaded. These are governments that have to balance their budgets, right? Mm-hmm. Only the federal government can skate through year to year with an unbalanced budget. And as we know, for the past 30, 40 years, governments have been operating in increasingly constrained budget environments. You know, the MBTA kind of ran smack into a $160 million deficit heading into fiscal year 13. So it's essentially a desperate actor, like most desperate actors, it sometimes gambles and hopes that it wins. And if it wins, then it becomes a little less desperate, and it becomes a little easier to balance its budget. So so it's a game in that sense, but it's kind of a game that banks have pulled these governments into. So yeah, let me take a step back.
I mean, kind of like when the casino pulls a gambler into playing a game.
Yeah. It's have I got a deal for you?
Right.
Or you could actually use an analogy to mortgage lending, right? When the banks pulled in millions of people to predatory mortgages,
right,
saying these will be good deals for you, they turned out not to be. And the interest rate swaps actually turned out to be very similar. So basically, what these are governments often use what's called variable rate debt to borrow. Not all of its borrowing, but some of its borrowing is through variable rate debt. And essentially that's akin to an adjustable rate mortgage, mm-hmm, where the cost of the debt is cheaper because the borrower assumes some of the interest rate risk, mm-hmm, specifically the risk that interest rates might go up.
Mm-hmm.
And so because you're assuming some of that risk, the bank is going to give you that debt cheaper than it otherwise would.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is that governments don't really like that unpredictability. And they also, of course, don't like facing the risk that interest rates might go up.
Mm-hmm.
So what they do is they take out these interest rate swaps. And essentially what the swap is it swaps with a bank a variable rate debt for a fixed rate debt so that a variable rate payment for a fixed rate payment so that the net cost to the government is the fixed rate payment. It's easier to see on a diagram. But essentially what it's trying to do is achieve the stability that one gets from a fixed rate payment matched up with the low cost.
They're not actually swapping the debt, right? They're not taking out a new loan.
Right.
They're just basically the bank says, I'll make your loan payments and you make me, which may vary,
mm-hmm,
and you make me this constant payment over the same period of time.
That's exactly right.
So if the interest rates on the debt go down, then the bank makes money. If the interest rates go up, then the bank would lose money and the agency would would be
saving. Yeah, the bank would lose money or the bank would make less money. Right. But what the bank makes is the difference between the fixed rate received and, yeah, as you said, the variable rate that it's paying to the MBTA. That's exactly right.
So it's a gamble on the part of the agency that interest rates will go up.
Well, it's a hedge in case they go up. Yeah.
But the fixed rate must be higher than the rate that they're paying at the time that.
Well, when they enter into the swaps, everything's equal, right? I mean, you know, when you walk into a casino, you haven't lost any money yet.
Right.
So,
wouldn't the bank charge a premium for that over what the current interest rate was?
Yeah, there are fees involved, certainly, and they're like, but there are also upfront payments that the agencies get in return.
Yeah.
No, I mean, it's a really kind of complicated game, and both sides are hoping that it works out for them.
Mm-hmm.
But once the game starts moving, in other words, once let's say you and I enter into a swap today, we're even, and neither of us is in the money. Next week, when rates start to vary, and rates vary on a weekly basis, then either you or I is going to start to be in the money.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So what happened with the MBTAs?
So, over the last decade, say, starting in the maybe late 90s and up until 2010, the MBTA, which is the most indebted transit agency in the country, right? We should start with that understanding, is that by ridership, it's the fifth largest, but by debt, it's the biggest. And it's got about one-tenth the ridership of New York, so there's no way that it should be the most indebted transit agency in the country. But because of what's called forward funding, and if you want, we can kind of talk about that also.
Yeah, maybe we can come back to that, but let's focus on the swaps.
Yeah, so because of kind of how the MBTA was created, and essentially the MBTA that we have today was born in 2000. It resembles nothing the MBTA that existed before that. So because of how the MBTA was created, saddled with $3.2 billion in debt coming off the big dig, it was kind of, as the phrase goes, born broke. So it started issuing all this variable rate debt and then immediately started entering into all these different interest rate swaps. And I should say that, you know, I'm hardly the first person to look at this. The state auditor, Joe DiNucci, then state auditor Joe DiNucci, in 2008 put out a report kind of auditing some of the MBTA's financial practices. And one of the things he looked at was interest rate swaps. And what he found was that through December 31st, 2005, so years ago and before the kind of financial crash, the MBTA had lost $55 million on its interest rate swaps. And bear in mind, these are deals meant to reduce debt service costs.
Mm-hmm.
And instead, they lost $55 million through then. Since then, their losses have gone into the triple digits.
So, I mean, why did they, well, do you think they just made bad judgment as to what, did they actually, you know, when they were negotiating these deals, did they just negotiate particularly badly, or was it just purely bad luck that the way the rates went after they did it?
Yeah, well, I think so. Well, it wasn't purely bad luck the way the rates went. No, certainly not that. I don't know if it's a question of negotiating badly or negotiating well, because, you know, when you go into a casino, you're not entering into a negotiation. You're praying that interest rates, in this case interest rates, do a certain thing.
Mm-hmm.
So the negotiation only gets you so far. The kind of swap deals that they have with the banks don't look especially egregious compared with other swaps.
Mm-hmm.
They're the same kind of gamble that all other governments who have swaps have, which is that if interest rates stay very low, variable interest rates stay very low, the agency is going to lose money. If they go up, then the agency is going to make money. So the negotiation part of it is actually pretty pretty minimal. I guess the one thing that they could negotiate is the fixed rate that they're paying to the bank, which is kind of the determinant of their loss in any given time period.
Right.
But those are generally set by the market. So the original sin was kind of to have entered into the swap at all. Once you decide to do that, you're not going to negotiate yourself a great swap deal.
Did other governments that had similar swaps over the same time period lose proportionally similar amounts of money?
Or? Yeah, so what's causing all of these losses now, I mean, you know, DiNucci found these losses, like, going through 2005.
Mm. And of course, since then, interest rates have dropped almost to zero.
Yeah, he issued his report in January 2008, 9 months before Lehman bit it,
right,
and the other banks started to do the same thing. So you can't entirely blame the bank crash, but certainly it exacerbated the problem. And what happened was, you know, of course, as we all know, the banks crashed the economy through their risky behavior. And in order to bail them out, in order to make it essentially free to borrow, the Fed lowered interest rates to near zero.
Right.
And as we know, Bernanke has said that interest rates are going to stay near zero through at least the second quarter of 2014.
Those are the interest rates to the banks, basically. I mean,
yeah, and that's what it costs banks to borrow, and that's right. Ultimately what determines the variable rate that they pay to the MBTA and to any other government with swaps. So yes, to answer your question, all governments that had swaps, and I should say it's not just governments, it's also big nonprofits. Harvard University lost $500 million a couple years ago to get out of some bad swap deals.
Mm-hmm.
So once interest rates fell to zero in the fall of 2008, or near zero in 2008, and then to about zero in the spring of 2009, the swaps became kind of a structurally losing bet.
Mm-hmm.
And all of these swaps, I should say, have what are called termination payments attached to them, which is essentially a prepayment penalty. If you want to get out of this deal, you've got to pay the bank ransom. And right now, what the T would have to pay to get out of its swaps is $103 million. Another thing I haven't mentioned, which is obviously an important kind of headline number, is what the T is losing every year on these interest rate swaps, and it's between $25 and $26 million at current interest rates. And because the interest rates are going to stay this way through 2014, the loss will be similar.
Which means that that's about 4 years. That means the amount it will cost them to get out of it is about 4 years worth of losses, probably.
Yeah, and so the question's also been asked, well, why don't they just pay it? Because these swaps are attached to long-term debt most of the time. And at current interest rates, over the next 19 years, so the debt that the swaps are associated with matures at various times. 2031 is the longest term debt right now that the T carries.
Mm-hmm.
So through 2031, at current interest rates, the T would have to pay $287 million on the swap payments. Mm-hmm. So on the surface of it, it looks like paying $103 million to get out of it would be a good deal. But the question is, where is the T going to get the money?
Right.
They don't have cash. And in fact, what Joe DiNucci's report found in 2008 was that on one of the deals, the T had to get out of a swap, so it issued bonds and used the proceeds from those bonds to pay a termination penalty.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just kind of piling
up the debt.
Yeah, it's basically piling debt on debt on debt. And it's not only in the realm of interest rate swaps that the T does this, of course. I mean, the reason it got itself the status of the most indebted transit agency in the country is because all it does is borrow, you know.
But let's get back to this born broke thing. I mean, yeah. Why do we have a public transit system that was saddled with highway debt in the first place? Does that really make a lot of sense?
Well, so the big dig was clearly a more expensive project than was originally planned for,
mm-hmm.
and it took longer to do. And so the debt that the MBTA assumed from that ended up being not big dig debt per se. In other words, not the borrowing costs to build the highways and the tunnels, mm-hmm. But when you do massive car-oriented infrastructure projects, you have to mitigate those things with pedestrian, with biking, mm-hmm. and with transit options. And so, in order to meet this mitigation requirement, the what was then the Mass Department of Transportation spent, or the state, I guess, borrowed $3.2 billion to undertake transit options. And mm-hmm. a lot of these things were kind of politically popular. But they had really figured out no way of paying for that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, having run up this $3.2 billion debt, they just kind of handed it over to the T in 2000. Along with that, they gave them what was ostensibly a way to pay for it, which was one penny of the sales tax.
Right, out of five at that
which
time.
Which that time was right, it was 5%, and now it's 1.25 pennies out of 6.25%. Clearly, in a decade that has seen two recessions, one of which is the worst in 75 years, any revenue that you expect to come from consumer spending is going to not be enough revenue.
Mm-hmm.
And so the T was born broke because it was $3.2 billion in debt, and it kind of structurally had no way to pay it off.
Okay, but that actually was transit-related projects that mm-hmm. they were paying for. It wasn't highway, per se.
Right, but the transit projects that they had to take on, they didn't have to take all of them on. I mean, they could have been more judicious in how they took them on,
mm-hmm.
and the amount of transit investment was proportional to the amount of highway debt. So one drove the other. And a responsible government would have looked at their budget every year and said, here's what we can afford to do. Here's how we're going to pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
But they weren't worried how they were going to pay for it. They just borrowed and borrowed and borrowed. And then in 2000 said, give the T the bill.
I'm still a little bit confused by the source of this initial debt. I guess you're saying that there was because of the big dig that somehow necessitated certain transit mm-hmm. projects that wouldn't have been needed if it wasn't for the big dig, or maybe some of them really weren't needed at all.
Yeah, it's both. I mean, some of them weren't needed, and then others were just kind of like politically popular
mm-hmm.
projects that, you know, different state legislators wanted for their own districts.
I see.
So they just undertook them and undertook the borrowing costs to build them, but didn't actually pay for them.
And I guess the big question is, what do we do? I mean, how do we deal with the fact that we've got the most heavily indebted transit system in the world without what the MBTA seems to be doing in their current round of recommendations to the legislature? They're basically talking about dismantling large parts of it and raising fees on everybody. And mm-hmm. And is there another alternative? I mean, could they?
Yeah. So I mean, clearly, so there are kind of two tracks here, right? I mean, there are probably a number of tracks, but the two that I've been focusing on are, what can the MBTA do itself,
mm-hmm.
and what, and not just me, but the MBTA has been also kind of categorizing their solutions as like things the MBTA can do and then things the state can do.
Mm-hmm.
And so in the first two scenarios, right, the MBTA's quote-unquote solutions were to raise fares by an average of 35% to 43%, to cut service on between 23 and 101 bus lines, and that's out of a system that has about 190 bus lines, so more than half. It was just going to devastate riders. But it was also
cutting service also has the potential of making a vicious cycle, right? Because you cut service, you lower ridership, and you may lower the overall income as well.
Yeah, very much so. And that's built into their kind of models of what they're going to save and what they're going to make. So on net, they would have filled the deficit. But it was also only going to be a one-time solution. And mm-hmm. so in addition to being just totally devastating to the MBTA's entire service area, most disproportionately to seniors, students, and riders with disabilities,
right.
It was unsustainable. They were going to have the same fight next year.
Uh-huh.
And so scenario three, the one that came out last week and the one that they probably, as we speak, are voting on or already have voted on, relies on lower fare hikes, 23%. Although I should point out that four of the five top fare hikes by percentage still fall on riders with disabilities,
right.
and with seniors.
And 23% is not a small
hike. Nothing. Oh, no, not at all. I mean, it's only quote unquote good in comparison to 35% to 43%,
right.
But it's a big deal. And none of us are getting 23% pay increases,
no.
So that's going to displace some kind of spending.
Yep.
So they have that part of the solution, but then they also call on the state legislature to fork over $51 million from a motor vehicle inspection fund that apparently has a surplus. So,
yeah. That's another one-time fix, though.
It's another one-time
right.
fix, and it's also very curious that, you know, they knew they had this $160 million deficit, so initially they put out this draconian proposal, and now they found a kind of quasi-political fix to one-third of it. So it does show that the legislature can do something, which kind of requires us to turn our attention to the legislature to solve the rest of the problem, to do away with what you point out is, for many, a draconian 23% fare hike, and more to the point, to put in place some kind of sustainable revenue solution for the T, because the sales tax isn't working.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever sources they have now just isn't going to cut it. And so in order to avoid this fight next year, the legislature is going to have to act. And in fact, half an hour from now, hundreds, maybe thousands of us are going to be gathering by the state mm-hmm. house to make exactly
demand
that
demand that the legislature does.
Yeah.
So basically, the legislature should devote a funding stream to the T that's adequate to carry these costs and or remove some of this debt and put it someplace else, right?
Yeah, well, so the someplace else would be to take it back.
Mm-hmm.
And interestingly enough, Richard Davey, the Secretary of Transportation for the state, a couple days ago said, I would love to see the state take the MBTA's debt back on its books.
Mm-hmm.
That's not going to happen. Administration and Finance Secretary Jay Gonzalez has been very clear that's not a solution, because that would still increase the state's debt load. So it's not like this debt just disappears. It goes back to the state.
Yes, but the state, in principle, has the option of raising taxes.
Precisely, yes, exactly. And the other solution is the state could raise taxes and just devote a portion of it to the MBTA. You know, a good percentage, I don't know the exact number, but a good percentage of regional transit agencies all around the country depend on some kind of payroll tax or some kind of dedicated tax,
mm-hmm.
Some kind of gas tax. I mean, there are a number of solutions that have been offered that are all political.
Mm-hmm.
To get back for a second to the interest rate swaps, that
mm-hmm.
actually does not lie with the legislature. That is something that the MBTA could call on the banks to renegotiate. So right now it's costing the MBTA $26 million a year, and what they'd be calling for a renegotiation of is the fixed rate that they're paying, because they signed on to these fixed rates back when interest rates were higher
mm-hmm.
than they actually are now. And so a renegotiated rate could lower it. And we should be clear that I'm not just talking about canceling the existing swaps and entering into new ones at market rates. I'm talking about a negotiated solution where you go to the bank and you make the case, look, we taxpayers bailed you out, now it's time for you to bail us out. Unfortunately, the MBTA and the the CFO for the Department of Transportation have expressed unwillingness to take on this option, and they've actually been somewhat cute about it. As part of the Scenario 3 release, they put out a table listing all the proposals that various outside groups and various staffers at the MBTA had recommended for fixing the deficit. And there were 91 solutions. 90 of these solutions they kind of flagged as being fully in the MBTA's control, partially in the MBTA's control, or not in the MBTA's control. The only one that they left blank was interest rate swaps. So they won't even answer for kind of who is to address this problem. And of course the answer is that it's partially in the MBTA's control. The MBTA cannot unilaterally get out of these swaps. It would be bad for their credit and it would cost them $103 million. But they can call on the banks to do so. And there's precedent for this. In the Bay Area, the Asian Art Museum, which is a nonprofit museum run by a foundation in the city of San Francisco, successfully, through a public pressure campaign, got JPMorgan Chase to relieve them of some of the debt and some of the swaps. In Los Angeles, which was kind of where the big public swaps fight started, the city council voted unanimously to instruct its financial officers to go to the banks and call on a renegotiation, and also said that we will not do business with banks that don't release us from these swaps. Right now, the city of Oakland is planning to enter into renegotiations with banks over these swaps. A community college in the Bay Area is doing the same thing. So there's definitely precedent for it.
Okay, and that you kind of suggested some of the pressure that maybe we could bring to bear, that could be brought to bear on the banks. I mean, one is obviously just public opinion. I mean, banks have a public relations problem right now anyway, so a public relations campaign could hurt them more. And the other one is that state could simply not do business with banks that weren't cooperating. That's something they could legitimately do.
Exactly. The state could do it, and also the city of Boston could do it. So the MBTA, we should be clear about kind of which banks we're talking about. The MBTA is right now has interest rate swaps with four banks. Three of them are losing swaps. One of them is making a little bit of money on now because it's tied to an interest rate that doesn't fluctuate in the same way as the other interest rates. But the three banks it's losing money to are Deutsche Bank, JPMorgan Chase, and UBS. And these are banks that have received between $60 and $100 billion in taxpayer bailouts that pay their CEOs $3 to $21 million a year. And JPMorgan Chase is actually an interesting case because, so UBS and Deutsche Bank are foreign banks. But JPMorgan Chase, of course, is based in New York. And the city of Boston does a lot of business with JPMorgan Chase. It has money on deposit with JPMorgan Chase. It uses JPMorgan Chase for its bond business. And probably most amazingly is it gave JPMorgan Chase a $2 million property tax break in 2008. This is a bank that has $1.8 trillion in assets that paid its CEO $21 million in 2010.
Why did they do that?
I don't really know why they did that. You know, a lot of times cities will offer property tax incentives for a company to relocate from another city to its city. You know? So the city of Boston, for example, could ask, I don't know, you know, Vertex Pharmaceuticals, for example, was located in Cambridge. The city of Boston gave Vertex economic incentive to relocate to Boston. I don't like those kinds of deals, but I get the logic behind them. J.P. Morgan Chase's office were located at 73 Tremont Street, right in Government Center, and it got $2 million to move to 451 D Street in the Seaport District. So it wasn't even coming in from outside the city. And how much it increased the city's property tax base by, I have no idea. But yeah, they got $2 million, which is nothing to them, of course. So one could argue that they owe the city of Boston money, and one could argue that the mayor, who has been very outspoken to his credit about the need for structural reform to the T's finances and the unacceptability of cuts that affect the city, could go to JPMorgan Chase and kind of make them an offer. Say, you get us out of these swaps and we'll continue to do business with you. You don't let us out of these swaps and we'll have to, you know, kind of examine our relationship. I should also point out that Cambridge used UBS for its most recent bond offering. It paid them $250,000 in fees. And so they could also kind of establish the same standards for who they do business with.
I'm not sure about the other two, but I know Deutsche Bank has also been involved in a lot of the foreclosure struggles that have been going on in this city.
Yeah, so Deutsche Bank and JPMorgan Chase, JPMorgan Chase is the only of those three banks that does mortgage lending. But Deutsche Bank is one of the top servicers and trustees of the mortgages. So Deutsche Bank and JPMorgan Chase have been big in the foreclosure business in Boston. UBS has not been. And actually, I gave a presentation on interest rate swaps to City Life Vita Urbana, which is a group in Jamaica Plain that that works on foreclosures and post-foreclosure eviction defense. And I made a map showing this, the bus cut proposals under the first two scenarios and J.P. Morgan Chase and Deutsche Bank foreclosures. And you really see kind of the racialization of this problem. I mean, it's just like I looked at five neighborhoods, J.P., Roxbury, Mattapan, Dorchester, and Hyde Park. And, you know, these neighborhoods are just getting killed twice by these banks, you know, once on foreclosures and once on interest rate swaps. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you. This has been very informative, I guess. Is there anything else you want to add on this, or are we...
No, I think that pretty much covers it. I'm sure there's, you know, it's a big, complicated issue, and it's one that I would encourage people to keep an eye on, because as I mentioned at the outset, the MBTA is not the only government that has these. The state's losing $120 million a year, and so there are other agencies that we are going to, well, that we would like to kind of call on to demand a renegotiation of these swaps in the future. So, yeah, hopefully this is just the beginning of people starting to think about these issues.
I guess one other, that makes me think of one other thought, which is, do you think there's any chance at all that the legislature will do something more proactive than the MBTA is calling for, or is it basically that the high point and they could either do that or less?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm not a political forecaster. I think for this fiscal year, we're probably unlikely to see anything beyond the $51 million motor vehicle inspection fee. But it's definitely going to be an issue for the coming fiscal year. You know, the governor's already filed legislation. There's an MBTA caucus in the legislature. There's also an RTA caucus, which stands for Regional Transit Authority. Mm-hmm. And those are the 15 regional transit authorities outside the MBTA, so mm-hmm. Southeastern Mass, Springfield, the North Shore, Lowell, Worcester, et cetera, mm-hmm. et cetera, which also have massive funding problems. Mm-hmm. They offer generally terrible service. They are relied on disproportionately by low-income workers, much more so than the MBTA, mm-hmm. which, like, millionaires ride into their jobs at the banks every day. And so any solution that addresses public transit is going to have to be a statewide solution, mm-hmm. Not least because you're not going to be able to get legislators from Western, Southeastern Mass on board with an MBTA fix if you don't address the regional transit agencies in their districts. And they're right to call for a comprehensive solution. So we're going to hopefully be part of that solution as well.
There's going to be plenty of work for activists to do on this issue for some time to come.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
This is Free School University. We've been interviewing Jeremy Thompson, a researcher with 1199 SEIU and Mass Uniting.
So one other thing that I wanted to note was that one of the issues that governments have in calling on the banks to renegotiate these swaps is they feel they have no leverage. You know, we tell them, you can point out to the banks that they got bailed out and now it's time for you to bail us out. But that's essentially making a moral case. You know, in addition to that, there can be the threat of a public campaign. But again, that causes the banks to, rather that assumes that the banks are gonna use their kind of reputational risk before they move. And then, of course, there are big move our money actions like the city of LA threatened to do or prepared to do, like I'm suggesting the city of Boston could do. But one great piece of, I guess I don't want to call it leverage yet, but something that the governments could point out is that there is now kind of an international investigation. Regulators in the US, the UK, Canada, Europe, Switzerland, Japan are all looking into the collusive manipulation of what's called LIBOR. And I'll just speak very quickly about that. LIBOR is the London Interbank Offered Rate. And that is the rate that determines the majority of variable rates that banks pay to the T and to other governments on swaps. So the difference, what the T is paying out losing on swaps is the difference between a fixed rate and a variable rate. The variable rate in most cases is tied to LIBOR. It appears that banks have been collusively manipulating LIBOR downward. Yeah, which, and just so we get a sense of how important LIBOR is, in 2008, the British Bankers Association, which kind of manages LIBOR, called it the world's most important number. And why is it the world's most important number? Because it helps set rates for variable car loans, student loans, small business loans, and it underlies a $360 trillion global market for derivatives. So if banks were manipulating their side of the deal down collusively, then they were going to make more money on these swaps. So as I said, you've got a number of government agencies looking into this deal. You've got the U.S. Department of Justice has opened a criminal investigation into it. And the city of Baltimore, which was a big government user of swaps in the last decade, is actually suing a number of these banks specifically because of its losses on the interest rate swaps. So one could point out to the MBTA, to the state, to the Mass Water Resources Authority, to any government that, you know, you could call on the banks to renegotiate these swaps and point out that we could also sue you. We could also jump onto this lawsuit with the city of Baltimore and lots of other agencies because you manipulated this rate down. A couple weekends ago, Fortune magazine said that this scandal could end up being bigger than the international mortgage crisis. So that's something for us to keep an eye on. Yeah, exactly, right. Well, hopefully we can actually, you know, really recover some losses and punish evildoers in this case, as we weren't able to do with the mortgage crisis. So I just wanted to flag that issue as well.
You have been listening to a Free School University program that originally broadcast on April 4, 2012, as part of our coverage of the Day of Action for Public Transportation. The Free School University program is educational programming by the 99% for the 99%. Please join us every Wednesday at 7 p.m. USA Eastern Time on Occupy Boston Radio, OBR.FM, on your internet browser.